Middays with Mannix and Mannix.
I was going to listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
With Jeff Mannix.
What kind of bear is best? Black bear.
And Taylor Mannix.
I'm a Tony Romo fan and he retired, so now I bleed green. Go Birds!
Call 207-775-2217 or 1-866-811-9505.
Phone is ringing. Oh my God.
Every single thing that every fan does at home or at the stadium makes a direct impact in the game.
It's about to get all stupid up in here!
Middays with Mannix and Mannix begins now. Here's Jeff and Taylor.
The weather outside is weather.
It's called Two Brothers. Two Brothers. It's just called Two Brothers.
You're Larry Bird.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place.
Middays with Mannix and Mannix. Good morning. It's our America 250 edition. Jeff, I'm on my own today. Taylor is off for the 4th of July, a well-earned break for the younger brother. So I'm here on my own today. Yep, the U.S. soccer anthem back again because we're moving on to the round of 16 in the FIFA World Cup, and there is absolutely nobody else I'd want to talk to on a day like today than our good buddy. He's the New England Revolution broadcast voice, Brad Feldman, joining us right now to talk a little FIFA World Cup. Brad, good morning, man. How are you as on the day after we're moving on to the last 16?
Good morning, Jeff. Yeah, the vibes, as the young people say, are immaculate. It was great to see Mauricio Pochettino, the U.S. men's national team coach, singing along with the supporters after the victory. I think, you know, it maybe not immaculate, right? Because Flo Balogun, as you noted in your flash update there, will be suspended after the red card. But everything else, you know, shut out, advanced around the 16, and it just feels like there's a strong wind at the back of the U.S. national team right now.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I suppose I need to start there with that red card on Flo Balogun. I don't know about you watching it at home. I was really, really upset after they made that decision on VAR. I think yellow card, sure. To me, that's not a red in that situation. You certainly have watched a whole lot more soccer than me. What's your opinion? Do you think that was a valid red card?
I don't, for a couple of reasons. One, that up until, you know, this round of games, they'd been really judicious overall, the referees and, you know, the match officials, in sort of intervening in these decisive kinds of moments, or potentially decisive moments. And if in real time the referee had a good view of it and didn't deem it worthy, like serious foul play, excessive force, if you slow that thing down, obviously it looks a lot worse. You know, there is that one moment where the ankle rolls over and Balogun's, you know, studs are on top of the ankle. But, you know, the letter of the law, intent, is not supposed to matter, but it was clearly an attempt at a play on the ball. So, like, you could say, like, the right call, I think people were pretty unanimous, observers and experts, in saying that a yellow in real time would have been the right call because it was reckless. But it's not excessive force. Now, getting in the mind of the player is not in the laws of the game. But the Fox rules analyst, Mark Clattenburg, former Premier League referee, he said what we were all thinking. There's no malice in it, right? People referring back to the Messi tackle in the knockout phase where he raked the Achilles of an opponent. It looked like there might have been a little malice in that. It might have been a little get back. You know, we don't know. But there is no review on that. And so, you know, to take the, you know, the U.S. at a time when they were up by just one, and to take their best attacking threat off the field for something that in real time wasn't adjudged to have been a red card foul, seems to me like, you know, both in the context of the overall tournament and the spirit of the law and probably the letter of the law, like you could say that's an orange card. But like if the referee in real time doesn't see it as a red, then you give a yellow. So I think he messed up twice.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. I mean, I hope the U.S. is able to get that red card overturned. I kind of doubt that it's going to happen.
Yeah, the last reporting I saw is that there's no mechanism for appeal, that there's not a disciplinary committee like there are in most leagues. That's what I saw as of, you know, of last night after the game from some credible sources. Now, I'd love to be proven incorrect on that, but I think Balogun's out.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate, obviously, and going up against Belgium, who we'll talk about in a little bit, I think that's going to be real difficult. But I do want to ask, too, about that free kick from Malik Tillman, who's kind of my boy. Bayer Leverkusen's my favorite German club, so he plays for them. So I already kind of liked him a little bit there. But that I don't know that we've really had in the U.S. team a quote-unquote free kick specialist in a little while, but I'm really excited about that now. That was a gorgeous goal, and I'm happy. We've got somebody who can create some danger from a set piece now.
Well, you know, there's all this, you know, there's a lot of garbage on the internet. There's also some, if you curate your feed well, like I try to do, some really, really good stuff. I saw somebody breaking down the physics of just how difficult that was. Like, obviously the goalkeeper gave him a lot of the, you know, sort of near post side of the goal, facing the goal to look at, but that was protected by the wall. So for him to get that up and down over the wall, you know, that took a specialist touch and stroke to bury it. And the keeper did get a hand on it, but there's just too much top spin and dip on it. So it was beautifully executed. Also, you know, he had his bloody sock moment while they're getting the red card decision. Tillman's shoe had been sort of sliced open by a dirty tackle that wasn't given a red card. He was bleeding, got a new pair of shoes, and that clearly worked. But more than that, since you bring up Tillman, and I know you know this because you watch him a lot, He's a lot more than a free kick specialist. Like, you got to deliver in those big moments, but he's been bossing it. He is also sort of like he's a number eight hybrid. That midfield of McKinney, Adams, and Tillman really has been balanced and really, really good. And, you know, the work that they put in down a man was incredible. The work that he's put in, you know, as sort of a creator, even when he's not scoring the goals, you know, he's not, you know, quite at the Olise level for France, but he is not, it's not just great to have a guy who can execute a free kick from a dangerous spot like that, but that whole zone, you know, the one, you know, Thierry Henry's been talking about on the broadcast, that, you know, zone 14, he can really, you know, slice and dice, chop it up in there. Great foot skills and also athletic and smart reading of the game. So I think that Tillman, who I thought, you know, like they, I think I said on one of the previews, like they needed him to be that good for this attack to flow even more than Pulisic in some ways. But I think he's over-delivered based on expectations because a lot of people aren't Bayer Leverkusen fans. We're not familiar with him unless they're following the friendlies and the build-up to the World Cup. So that was just sort of the icing on the cake. And, you know, we could all breathe out after you put that one away because that 1-0, it did not look like a safe lead.
It certainly did not look like a safe lead. And as we mentioned, the next opponent now is Belgium. Although until there were about 4 minutes left in regulation, it looked like the opponent was going to be Senegal, as Belgium was down 2-0, managed to come all the way back and win this match. We do have the recent friendly between the two in the lead-up to the tournament just 3 months ago that didn't go too well for the U.S. What do you think of this matchup now against Belgium in the round of 16?
Well, they certainly are going to have a lot of belief in themselves after that improbable late comeback. You know, they were, you know, Senegal, as you say, up 2-0, you know, into the 85th minute, and then it all fell apart, you know, Lukaku and Tielemans scoring, and the VAR reared its ugly head again in the second extra time, like deep into stoppage time. So, you know, that was a gutting loss for Senegal, and a lot of neutrals were pulling for them. Belgium is not what they were when they beat the U.S. in the 2014 World Cup, famously 1-0. That feels like a lifetime ago. And, you know, Lukaku and their excellent goalkeeper, Courtois, you know, really, you know, they still have De Bruyne too, but, you know, that golden generation is not there. Origi, Hazard, those guys are retired. Belgium's still going to be a tough out, especially without Balogun at the point of attack. I throw that friendly result out the window. I do think that they have a very good manager. I think watching Rudy Garcia against Pochettino is going to be fascinating. Chess match. Both of them have kind of, you know, the willingness to be aggressive and go for it. They're also, you know, savvy, you know, tacticians. You know, I think that Belgium relies a lot on set pieces. Lukaku was not thought to be fully match fit coming into the tournament and has looked better and better. Still carries a lot of weight, but, you know, that's a big, you know, that's a big task. You know, how good has Tim Ream been, by the way, in the U.S.? With his passing, his reads, his, you know, picking up good positions. You know, he jousted with a couple of the Bosnia players last night, so he's shown in a little bit of an edge that we don't always see from him. I think, you know, one area where they definitely, for me, have an edge is Courtois in goal. Yeah. Ricardo Pepi or you know, one of the attacking players for the U.S. is going to have to step forward. Balogun has been so good, and whether it's Pulisic or Tillman, like, somebody's going to have to step forward. And, you know, I think that, you know, this is a good time to get Belgium. If the U.S. had Balogun, I think they would be favored, you know, being the home team. I think it's sort of even Steven. I haven't looked at the odds. I'm not a gambling man, but I wouldn't be surprised. They're pretty close to even, with just tipping it towards the U.S. But think about that. We're into the round of 16. The idea that I'm even entertaining the notion of the U.S. being favored, you know, maybe this sport has made progress in the last decade, in this country.
Yeah, no, and it's awesome to kind of watch unfold in real time, for sure. I do want to talk about a couple of the big soccer nations that have exited this tournament already, and a couple European giants with Germany and the Netherlands, both out on penalty kicks, but nonetheless both out of the tournament a lot earlier than they expected. What do you make of those two national teams' early exits, and maybe where both of those teams' programs go from here?
Well, it's funny. I was at, and this is going to sound like a flex, but I was actually at the game at Euro 2004 when Germany lost to Czech Republic. They called them there before, you know, they asked everybody to call them Czechia. A huge upset that triggered the famous DOS reboot project. There's a great book about how Germany, very proud soccer nation with a great history, sort of rebuilt their whole, you know, sort of youth development pyramid up to the national team development program and domestic league priorities and everything to get back to where they were by, you know, because they were the host nation in 2006 for, you know, they realized that they had fallen behind. I think it is going to trigger that. I think, you know, some observers have said that having Bayern Munich be, you know, such a powerhouse year in, year out, may have, you know, stalled out some of the development. They have a little more of a salary cap kind of a structure in the Bundesliga and whether that's good or bad, as opposed to like this little wide open crazy competition, you know, where people are overspending to win, is, you know, what I, you know, it's hard to say what drives these things. I would just say that maybe they're not quite the favorites coming in that they thought they were or that they should have been. Now with, you know, so much sharing of information in terms of training methods, tactical scouts, video scouts, analytics, all those things, and players that play globally, you know, smart teams like a Paraguay knows that we, you know, they know how to soak up pressure, and, you know, 1-1 suited them. You know, they, you would say man for man, Germany has more quality, but, you know, they, the last two World Cups before this, they dumped out in the group stage. They actually made it further in the last couple of times. They did well at Euros, right? Netherlands, Morocco, I don't know how you could say Morocco were, you know, in some ways the favorites coming in. They were in the last four, you know, like I was in a media room a few days ago and somebody said, give us an upset. I said, well, Morocco, they're like, that's not an upset. They were, you know, saying finals last time. Fair play. You know, it's hard. You know, I support Liverpool, and it was so emotional for Cody Gakpo to score in that game. But, you know, like the Dutch needed their goalkeeper, Bart Verbruggen, to make a crazy stop on Rahimi in the 97th minute. You know, it was like, Morocco has loads of quality. Like, I've been to both countries, and like Morocco has every bit the football and culture, if not the winning tradition, globally of Holland. Holland's actually never won it, right? Like they, you know, lost it in the final in '74, the first time I was aware of the World Cup. But every kid, you know, growing up in Morocco has a ball at his feet from the time he can walk, and so that, you know, as you shake it out going up the age group, you're going to have a lot of guys. A lot of these guys play in Europe. You know, they have close link to France. You know, most of them play in the French league or the other big league, like the Premier League. So, like, I don't even know how you can look at that as that big of an upset. It's a global game. And when you level the playing field in terms of week in, week out competition and training for these players at their home club, and, you know, I just don't think you can call these upsets, other than the expectations back home are really, really high for Germany and the Netherlands. You know, the Netherlands has a great football tradition and culture too, but these games are on such fine margins that, you know, they're won and lost on such fine margins that it's, you know, I'm not saying you're saying it's an upset, but I do think that, you know, like it tells, I guess how each matchup is different, but let's measure the U.S.'s success to this point by those standards, right?
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. has advanced to the round of 16. Germany and Holland, who knocked the U.S. out last time, have not. So right there, you could say that we're in the conversation with these top footballing nations. And, you know, I actually think, you know, sort of taking big picture again, you play Country Roads. I just feel like there, you know, there's so much craziness and wrong in the world, but like right now, the World Cup feels like it's bringing a lot of belief, a lot of joy, a lot of, you know, togetherness in this country. And I don't know, like the U.S. national team, the U.S. men's national team has a tough assignment in Belgium, but it's doable. And so I think everybody should feel really good about that, you know, even in the Boston area after the trade.
Absolutely, which I do want to get into with you a little bit, but maybe quick word about Tejon Buchanan and his Canadians reaching the last 16 as well.
Yeah, well, we'll brag on Tejon, even though he's not a Rev anymore. You know, after Syracuse Revolution, we're smart enough to draft Tejon Buchanan. I think really, you know, without that platform of MLS and the Revs, he doesn't end up in Europe, first in Belgium, then Italy, now doing great in Spain with Villarreal. And he's been a key component, you know, through four games now. You know, game one, they got that draw against Bosnia, and I think he, you know, was part of a more sort of disciplined, tactical set up from Jesse Marsh, but then they unleashed the hounds against Qatar, and was really tortured their defense going down the wing, really involved in creating attacking chances. Switzerland game, full disclosure, I didn't watch that whole. I saw the compressed match of that, but. You know, he got himself fouled a lot, which he'll do. He'll torture people and take off down the wing. So physically, you have to take him down. So that was considered a big component of that. And then his 75 minutes against South Africa, he was replaced by Alphonso Davies, who they're easing back into it. But like, imagine you're opposing wing midfielder or fullback, and you've just got Tajon bearing down on you. For 75 minutes, and they bring in Alphonso Davies. It's withering,
Yeah.
So, Canada, who started slowly, looked like we'll see. But Morocco is going to be a tough one for them. Like I was just talking about. So this may be a bridge too far. But that'll be an interesting stylistic matchup, I think, because Morocco is so technical, but they got guys to run by you too. They're not just tippy tappy. So Canada and some of their physicality. Interesting matchup, but certainly more focus in these parts on the U.S.
Yes, without a doubt. And you mentioned it. Your other big passion besides soccer is basketball and the Celtics. So your thoughts on the blasphemy that is Jaylen Brown as a Philadelphia 76er?
Yeah, like that. Like I just cringed when you said that. Like anywhere but Philly. Even the Lakers. He's out of sight and out of mind a little more, right? Like you saw the Marcus Smart. It didn't look right. That uniform on Marcus Smart, but you weren't as bothered by it because you only see him twice a year. The Brown, it still hasn't settled in. Like I could give you a 20-minute analysis, still not solved. Until we hear what the Celtics themselves have to say about it, I don't know if they'll ever truly reveal it. I don't know. Was the decision made right after the regular season? I think that. Some of it is that, I don't think that what Bobby Marks said, it wasn't what he said, what he heard somebody else say, but I don't think it's completely off the mark. I think in this, the efficiency metrics combined with that contract made him, hard to deal, and you're not going to get a return that's equal to his value on the court today, because nobody disputes that. Like, he carried the team, a young team, to a 56-win season. But that said, getting a guy back who's also on a supermax contract that at least this year doesn't save you that much money, the draft picks are good. I think if it's the Clippers pick, better than the Sixers pick. It seems that way, but, I'm still trying to make sense of it. I thought they'd do one more go-around with the Jays because I don't, maybe it's like, they didn't, because, there's the option to the extension afterwards. They're like, we have to get out under this contract. And the only ones who give them anything were the Sixers, who were like, we got to get out from under this Paul George contract. But it just doesn't sit right because it is their, arguably biggest or one of their three biggest rivals, four biggest rivals, Sixers. And, that JB's got more left in his legs than Paul George, who I think people are unduly critical of. You saw Paul George for two or three games helped, it really killed the Celtics, but like the guy's gonna be, 37 on the next birthday and he's making $60 million. So there has to be, how's it? Leave it on a positive note. I love the Mitchell Robinson deal.
Indeed.
That's awesome. That's positive. Let's leave it there.
Yes, let's leave it there. Absolutely, I agree with you. I like the Mitchell Robinson addition too, but boy, I would like Jaylen still on the team. Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the World Cup. We'll talk again next week.
Good man, Jeff. Thanks a lot.
You got it. Again, New England Revolution broadcast voice, Brad Feldman. We'll come back and we'll talk with outgoing Southern Maine Community College men's basketball coach Matt Richards about his decision to step away after 23 seasons. It's Middays with Mannix and Mannix.